America's top military general in Afghanistan, John F. Campbell, has warned that the Islamic State, ISIS, is trying to establish a regional hub in the country's eastern province of Khorasan. His words echo the findings of a Pentagon report released this week, which found that violence in Afghanistan had gone up by 27% in 2015. Afghanistan is the location of today's installment of Global Check-In, and Danielle Moyland is a freelance journalist in Kabul and a former Australian diplomat. Danielle, good morning and welcome to the program.
Thanks, Hamish. Good morning.
Just give us a picture of what the situation is in Afghanistan as far as ISIS, ISIL is concerned, because clearly it's a very, very long way from Syria, from Iraq, from territory that is controlled by ISIS. That doesn't mean, however, that they're not able to function in Afghanistan.
Yeah, look, that's right. I mean, ISIS first came about, I think, they first established a presence. People began to talk about it in March this year, but it really was unclear for some time whether it was ISIS or not, or rather just disaffected Taliban. I still think there's a bit of a question mark over that, but there certainly is now a much larger contingent of at least self-referencing groups that have pledged allegiance to ISIS in the east of Afghanistan, in Nangarhar in particular. They're believed to number about 1,500, and certainly they have established themselves. Whether or not they have links to the leadership is again a bit unclear, but they are certainly very well resourced. They've been undertaking a bit of a turf war with the Taliban in that area, and also launching pretty sophisticated attacks against Afghan security forces as well.
For these groups, as you sort of describe, self-identifying as ISIS, what's the advantage for them within the domestic Afghan context to do such a thing and formally or informally take on the Taliban for either territory or sort of influence in a particular area?
Well, I think that the realization by the Taliban this year that their leader Mullah Omar had been dead for a couple of years would have come as a shock to a lot of the Taliban fighters. And there was certainly already, I think, some rumbling within the ranks about, you know, whether he was alive or not. So I think that it was a useful propaganda tool, and certainly an opportunity to attract some of the more hardline fighters to the cause. And ISIS obviously have, I think, a much more conservative and more aggressive tactics than the Taliban, so they may be attracting some fighters in that sense. But they also are offering up a lot of money, and I think that's a really important point to note, that unemployment drives a lot of militancy here in Afghanistan, and from what we hear, the ISIS groups are offering significantly more sums than what the Taliban do to fight.
Presumably, still more than what the Afghan security forces pay as well.
Absolutely. I mean, we hear that ISIS pay their fighters up to $600 a month. And if you're a low-level security, if you're the army or the police, you earn around $200 a month here. So it's quite a lot in comparison. Mm.
In recent years, I would say particularly the last sort of 2 to 3 years, the formal process of, as the US would describe it, talking to the Taliban has stepped up. But the current government, really in a fairly serious way, is talking to the Taliban. The West has sort of understood now that whatever the shape of Afghan democracy might be in the future, it's likely to include the Taliban. Is there therefore an advantage or an opportunity there for ISIS to come in and collect some of those that are really sort of ideologically against democracy, any formal process, any process that has the sort of the blessing of the West?
Look, possibly I think so. I don't think as a whole that Afghans are very attracted to the ideology of ISIS. But of course, there are always going to be disaffected youths who are attracted to that, particularly if they are moving towards brokering peace. Having said that, I still think that's a very long way away. The Taliban are still launching very complex, sophisticated attacks. There were two huge ones just in the last couple of weeks, one in Kandahar that killed 50 people and one against the Spanish embassy here in Kabul as well. I think that while the Afghan government are really gambling a lot of political capital in trying to get the Taliban to the negotiating table, it's still quite a way off before we'll see significant progress on that.
Has there been a distinct shift in tone since Hamid Karzai left the scene as president, since we have this combination of Ashraf Ghani and Abdullah Abdullah running the country?
I think that when Ashraf Ghani and Abdullah Abdullah came in, there was a huge sense of hope, I think, for Afghans. And that has since dissipated. There's generally the feeling that the National Unity Government isn't working and that progress has been extremely slow and the country is, if anything, perhaps going backwards. I mean, it's been a terrible year for security, a terrible year for the economy. So I think overall there's a huge sense of disappointment in where the country is right now. Mm. And a lot of people are certainly talking about Karzai in much more romantic terms than what they were last year.
Goodness me, things have changed.
That's right. I mean, it's not unusual for people really here to talk about Karzai that in a completely different way than what they would have, a year ago, 2 years ago.
How has the power dynamic between Ashraf Ghani and Abdullah Abdullah unfolded? As background for those of you that haven't sort of followed Afghan politics, they both ran for the presidency. There was something of a legal quandary about who had actually won, and we ended up with this sort of national unity type scenario where Ashraf Ghani is the president, Abdullah Abdullah is, what's he called, the chief executive?
That's right.
And they sort of jointly run the country. But have they managed to do that in any sense, either personally or structurally, in a successful way?
I think that a lot of people blame that for the reason why that there has been no progress. They were meant to be working together in unity, but both sides, from both Ghani's people and Abdullah's people, will tell you that really it's a marriage of inconvenience. I don't think that they necessarily have different policy views in any really major sort of policy area. But I think that President Ghani certainly likes to take control of the government and very much sees himself as the president and in charge. And that I do get the impression that Abdullah's people feel that they're not being consulted enough and not being brought enough into the fold. And that includes also the first vice president, General Dostum, who is key to Ghani winning the election. He has certainly expressed in public and to the media many times that he feels that he's not being consulted enough in government decisions.
In terms of progress in Afghanistan, you mentioned that it hasn't been a good year economically. There has been this huge amount of development, particularly in places like Kabul and Kandahar. Is the pace of that change still progressing? Are you still seeing, massive amounts of sort of physical, tangible change on the streets in terms of shops, in terms of, I suppose, social interaction?
I think that from what I hear, I mean, I've been in Afghanistan for 18 months, but people say that it has changed enormously since then and since 2001, 2002, and that we shouldn't forget that there has been, enormous change from an infrastructure and also cultural level. However, I think that in the last year, the rising unemployment and rising hopelessness of people, particularly youth, particularly kids who are coming out of university and they feel equipped and ready to work good jobs, those opportunities just aren't there for them. And that's certainly something very obvious when you talk to Afghans and young Afghans in particular. I mean, a huge part of the economy was driven by the large deployment of NATO and US forces, and that was drawn down dramatically at the end of last year, and that certainly had an effect on the economy as well.
That's Danielle Moylan, a freelance journalist working in Afghanistan and a former Aussie diplomat as well.